This is Sequitur, an exploration of the natural consequences of our actions at the individual, community, cultural, and species levels. Sequitur is brought to you by Expressions of Peace, personal, powerful, and heart-to-heart. I'm Susan Livingston, your host and producer. Sequitur is archived under the Expressions of Peace tab at panina.org. That's P-A-N-I-N-A, as in peace and nonviolence in action. Sequitur, the theme song, is by Zympht. That's Z-Y-M-P-H-T. You can find more of his music on SoundCloud. Sequitur, it follows. Sequitur began production in April 2016 to provide extreme weather coverage and climate disruption updates while Extinction Radio was on hiatus. Inspired by Guy McPherson's Nature Bats Last, the focus of Sequitur expanded to consider the overarching issue of habitat loss. Sequitur's content further expanded under the influence of Derek Jensen's book, The Myth of Human Supremacy, to cover extinction events and their drivers for the whole web of life rather than only property destruction and loss of human life or monetized livelihood. The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History by Elizabeth Colbert, and Columbus and Other Cannibals by Indigenous historian Jack D. Forbes have provided additional conceptual underpinnings. Aho, Metakwe Owasan, we are all related.
Hee-haw! Hello, everybody, it's Benjamin the Donkey.
Hi, Benji.
It's 4th of July, 2017, and I'm here with Elizabeth West, and we're talking about the upcoming series that she's planning for Sequitur, working title, Sunset Windows.
You know, once we know all our chances are blown, how should we face the unknown? While awaiting our fate, we can still mitigate suffering, including our own. Hee-haw!
Exactly. I think that mitigation of suffering is exactly what Elizabeth is on about with her practices for gazing out the window at the sunset, in at least two senses. One is the acknowledgement that we are facing the end of our days as a species, so there's an invitation to be fully present rather than run away or hide our eyes. And the other is that even at the end of our days, there is still beauty to be found. That the sunset means the end of the day does not detract from its glory. So, Elizabeth.
You were just saying that you've done some editing, and?
Yeah, I guess I could talk a little bit about what this is. I am, as you know, Susan, a channel, and I have these guides who've been passing along to and through me direction and advice for me and for anyone who might want it about how to live as clearly, as luminously, and as purposefully as we would like to. I've even compiled a book of their guidance called Love is the Way. Now, these guides are not particularly interested in the wooey aspect of things and tend to describe themselves very simply as your heart's deepest love and your soul's greatest wisdom. In other words, their voice should be familiar if there's any resonance. They remind us of what we know profoundly and eternally within ourselves. So a couple of years ago, they passed on some ideas of things to do in the face of what surely looks like impending doom around these parts. They said, your world is going to hell in a handbasket. Things are falling apart faster than anyone can put them back together again, and on many fronts. Not only are the climate and the terrestrial and aquatic environment sullied and in pain, resources like food and water are endangered. Perhaps most alarmingly, human beings are displaying an increasing level of stress behavior. All of you can feel this movement, and most of you are reacting to it, whether you know what you're doing or not. I want to say personally that I believe that joy is the only excuse, because there is a preponderance of horrors, losses, cruelty, abject stupidity. For me, without the joy, the whole business of living strikes me, frankly, as a waste of time.
palate at best and often simply just too hard. There are surely other consolations in this life, but joy enlivens, for me, like nothing else.
You know, our suffering grows more severe until when we all disappear. Once you know this is true, why then what should you do? Enjoy it while it's still here. Hee-haw!
Now, what do I mean by joy? I don't know. There are a lot of ways of describing it, but what I'm talking about is an upsurging of life force that occurs under certain circumstances and makes us feel purely glad to be alive. Most often I find those energetic gifts, those moments arrive when I feel the deepest of connections with other life forms and life forces, when I know without a doubt that I am part of something greater. So that's kind of what I'm talking about here.
Yeehaw. Once convinced that extinction is true, you might ask, what the fuck do I do? One approach to employ is just try to enjoy until doom gets around to you. Yeehaw.
Finding joy or profound connection does become more difficult when the external circumstances grow dim. The focus tends to hover near the impending disaster. We all know this. It is that much more difficult to be transported by whatever music usually transports us when the kid is failing at school, when someone we love is ill, when a relationship is in trouble, when finances are not reliable. Those moments of joy or connection may still be on offer, the joy waiting quietly to be experienced. But while our focus is on the problem we want to solve, we tend to trudge right past the beauty. We forget to smell the roses, as it were. It's an easy matter to spend all of one's psychic energy in the trenches these days. And this may be what you choose to do, which is great. But if you find that you become disheartened and you feel that your nature is calling you to hold light, and yet you feel daunted, it's too hard, then it's important, it's critical to find a means that allows you to live as you choose to live, especially these days. This has always been the case, but it's more pressing, more urgent than it has ever been that we live our lives as we choose to live them, with consciousness and intention. And so that's what these practices are offered for, to help us explore and support us in finding joy, finding reasons to arise every morning, hopeful, for moments of brightness and beauty in the midst of the mess, helping us create with small actions our own little fragrant garden, an oasis that may sustain us in the worst times and offer solace and joy to those who visit.
Here is my doomer morning routine. I get up, a new day ahead, another day less till I'm dead. I don't care to bear the world that's still there, so then I go right back to bed. Hee-haw!
Now, each of us has our own coping mechanisms, and each of us is trying to work out how to manage as things in the three-dimensional world deteriorate. Some of us have found a bright light to look toward, perhaps a spiritual leader or teacher or tradition. Maybe it's family or other relationships, important work that absorbs us and gives us assurance that we're doing what we can. Some of us have become overwhelmed with the details of daily living and the demands they place, and still others are just fraying around the edges, physically or mentally or emotionally, and have to focus on how to heal from or deal with what appear to be personal, individual ailments. We are all reaching for the tools we know in order to handle the stresses of what we see happening and what we expect lies ahead.
Coping mechanisms. Some find the answer in hugs, others in large moonshine jugs. Figure out what to do by what works well for you, but I say the answer is drugs. Yeehaw!
The time to shift focus for the planet may well have passed, though miracles are always possible. What is needed now is a way, at least this is what the guides say, for each of us, and everyone will be different, to live vibrantly and joyfully if you choose, and with gratitude no matter what is happening around you. To live with hearts open and full, wide awake, while it all burns. Or at least what we need is the ability to make that choice if it calls to us. Now, to accomplish this is truly mastery. And yet, as with the mastery of any discipline, it starts with small steps. And most of us have the capacity to reach for it. With a little support, it should be that much easier. The sunset windows, these little joy practices, are an offer of some strategies to live with heart while the world goes up in flames around us. This is an extraordinary time, and thus these guides of mine want to share what they can in terms of guidance, structure, and direction for any of us who might find it useful.
You know, you may find yourself on the run, with no escape once doom's begun. And one unreal day you may hear yourself say, "My God, what have I done?" If you find that your self-view is shaming, that's simple to fix by renaming. In technical terms, your ego confirms it likes itself more by reframing. Hee-haw!
These are some practices that came through a couple of years ago. Ultimately, it doesn't matter where they came from, and that's an important point. I'm offering them here because I think we're in such tough times, and the external circumstances with which we're contending are so challenging, so painful, often so dark, that we need whatever we can lay our hands on that help us to live as, I hate the word happy, but as happily, as joyfully, as fully, whatever that might mean. I think the opportunities to live in grief and sorrow are voluminous at this point, and these are potentially a counterbalance if they work for somebody.
You know, determinism helps ease my cares, but there are other approaches, like prayers. The beliefs I assume calm my fears of doom just as everyone else's calm theirs. I don't want to say I'm depressed, but sometimes I'm really distressed, and I've come to conclude for improving my mood, doom seems to cheer me up best. Yeehaw!
So anyway, they're being offered in that spirit. If they are of value, then great. And if they're not, then great.
It's not about denying the grief and sorrow. It's about sinking into it with a certain, I hate the word acceptance. It's very overused in this particular community, but with a certain amount of equanimity and contentment. Does that capture it?
Well, I think, Susan, that exploring, allowing, and experiencing fully the sorrow, the grief, and also the anger, the regret, the rage, all of those things are really important. But they're also very magnetic in these times. I think it is our tendency as human beings in general to be pulled and seduced into living directed by our external circumstances. It's harder to live from the core, from the inner truth, for most of us. It's harder to have a fabulous summer day, you know, a glorious time with your friends on the beach doing something you love, hiking in the mountains, when you've just lost your job and you don't know how you're going to pay your rent. That external circumstance presses on us. It captures our attention. It's hard to resist our worries and our concerns about what's going on outside of us. And most people are very much more inclined, in my experience, to feel happy and carefree and present, which is really important here, when their lives are going well, when they have good health, when their relationships are good, when their children are doing well, when they have good housing and enough food, when all of those more basic level needs are being met. We're in a time where we know that those things are slipping out of our control. They may have always been out of our control, but we're really aware of it right now. And there are many of us who are worried, who are concerned, who think about where this world is going and what human beings have done and are doing. And so These practices are an offering, really, to allow us to be more present to ourselves and to other forms of consciousness, whether they be human or otherwise, on this planet in this moment, and to be able to fully live in the moment, as opposed to living in the future.
Or in the past,
exactly.
That's what struck me as you were speaking, is the emphasis on presence. If we can't enjoy hiking in the mountains because we just lost our job, we're stressing out over something that has already happened because of what we envision is going to come in the future.
Exactly.
And we're lost on the present moment completely.
And we may be surrounded by incredible beauty, by energies that are nurturing and sustaining and inspiring, but we miss them. We walk right through them without noticing them.
Yep.
And that seems to me like it's always been the case. I mean, all of our lives, we've had opportunities to just bask in beauty and love that we miss because we're focused on the future or the past or some other kind of concern. The urgency of being in the present has increased a great deal because the future is very limited at this point.
And there's nothing much we can do about the past. Before I turned the recording on, you were drawing a distinction between guilt and regret.
We were talking about making amends or being right or making offerings. You know, you were talking about making offerings to the mother, to the earth, because it's the right thing to do. Is that fair?
I don't want to say it's because it's the right thing to do. I'm making offerings to the mother because the mother has given me an enormous gift for which I feel gratitude. And so my offerings are an expression of gratitude. They're not an expression of amends for anything that I regret.
Okay. How would you feel about the word reciprocation?
Yeah, that's why I brought the notion, the shamanic notion of Aini in sacred reciprocity. I have received a gift. I can't help but feel gratitude if I recognize that I've received a gift, whether it's from Mother Gaia or from you or from my son, you know, the gift of the Sequitur theme music, for example. When he wrote that song, Sequitur wasn't even a twinkle in my eye, but nevertheless, I experience it as a gift.
Right. And from my perspective, the way that you understand your relationship with the earth is a pretty high expression. I feel personally sometimes very sorrowful, not guilty, but regretful about being part of a species that has done as much damage as the human species has done. And for me, that's a goad. That puts me in touch with what I've received and then maybe what I want to offer back.
Well, that's interesting to say that you have regrets about being part of a species. For me, at least, it seems like the whole notion of regret is tied up with choice. And I'm not sure I had anything to do with choosing to be born a human being at this time in history, in this place on the planet. Maybe you have a different take on that.
I don't feel like it has anything to do with choice for me, Susan. It just is. I am part of the species. And of course, I have made choices that I regret in retrospect. I've driven a car. I've flown in airplanes. I've bought conventional produce in my time. I have failed to recycle on occasion. You know, I mean, I've been recycling for as long as it's been, you know, an option. I do have some regrets. They're not huge, though, and I don't feel guilty, though. I feel like I did the best that I could do with the circumstances that I found myself in.
Right.
I'm not castigating myself. I simply feel sorrowful when I touch into the energy of the earth. When I feel what's happening in the oceans, I feel sad that it has come to this. I feel grief. And I furthermore feel like I belong to the organism, if you will, that has perpetrated a great deal of damage, not just on the earth, but on the other species on this planet, on itself, and, you know, even as we were saying earlier, on space. We've expanded ourselves into the heavens.
What comes up for me is more what I would call shame about the species rather than regret. I'm really standing firm with regret. There has to be some element of choice that I made of my own volition.
Now, see, I would say that shame requires choice. And so I would not go to shame. I do not feel shame. I feel sorrow and I feel regret.
For me, sorrow is much cleaner than shame or even than regret. I wish I could get to that pure, clean sorrow. And I'm looking forward to the practices that you're going to be showing up with over the next few shows that will maybe get me more in touch with a cleansed sorrow rather than this dirty, icky, sticky shame that I live with whenever I find out what we're doing to the planet. The plastic island in the Pacific is now 3 times the size of the state of Texas. Oh my God, you know, and you can't even find it because it's all microbeads.
I know. It's horrifying.
Horrifying is right. And that's what fills me with species shame. If I can get to the pure sorrow for the death of the ocean and leave behind my shame at being part of the perpetrating species, I would be so ever so grateful to you for that.
Well, it's a tall order, and we're all working on it if we're working on it.
You know the blame game? Blame is a mental invention which justifies cruel intention. Due to guilt removal, there's more self-approval and less psychological tension. Hee-haw!
I think that being present in the moment, present to what is alive and what is life supporting and life loving in ourselves and in all that is around us is a really important piece of that. Being in the now and being in the here too, being where we are. Because ultimately, Susan, you and I can do a little bit about all that plastic. We can very consciously not contribute to it. We cannot buy plastic. We cannot use plastic. We cannot dispose of plastic, even in a responsible way, because as we know, very little of it gets actually recycled. Most of it gets dumped. But beyond that, you know, we cannot stop 7.5 billion people from doing what they're doing. I mean, we can make suggestions, but everybody's got their free will here and they get to choose how they want to live in this moment. And so do we. And so by living more consciously, not just in terms of our choices, but in terms of our experience of this life, I think we make a difference for ourselves, and that difference in ourselves has the capacity to truly transform other people around us. That's my belief. That's my experience.
Yeah. Just because it can't be scaled up to 7.5 billion is no reason not to do it, right?
Exactly. I mean, because truly all I have is my life, which is limited, and my sphere of influence, which is limited. And no matter how large or small that sphere of influence is, it's still up to anybody I touch to make their own choices. Mm-hmm. I can't strong arm anyone into being conscious. That's ridiculous. And it doesn't work. So yes, this is what I have to work with in this time. And for me, giving back and being grateful has to do in large part with fully embracing, living, attending to what it is that I have, the life that I have, the life force, the God force, if you will, the intelligence, the heart, the senses, all of it, because that's what I have. I've been given consciousness and life force.
Teachings that the weather brings. just the same. Scream and shout, I promise I won't take it personally. Feelings come and the feelings go. For themselves, accepting that wins naturally without the need of time, unnecessary effort, or becoming someone else. Feelings come and the feelings go. It's alright. Feelings come and the feelings go. It's the light. It's alright. Still a mystery to us all. Yet we're so consumed with always trying to control. We're as above the clouds and then we lose our wings and fall. Feelings come and the feelings go. It's alright. Feelings come and the feelings go. It's alright. It's alright.
Listening to Sequitur, a production of Expressions of Peace, personal, powerful, and heart-to-heart. Sequitur is archived at pianina.org. That's P-A-N-I-N-A, as in Peace and Nonviolence in Action.
Before the break, you heard Here to Hear singing It's All Light with the alternate introduction from the Garage Sessions. You can find more of their music at SoundCloud. The name of the band is spelled H-E-R-E-I-I, as in the Roman numeral 2, H-E-R-E. Back to you, Elizabeth.
I want to get back to what it is you're hoping to set up with the Sequitur podcast going forward.
So, Susan, what I was thinking is that we have a few, probably about 8, of these very simple, brief practices that I would like to share with you and the Sequitur audience. And I will, you know, walk us through one practice
for sure.
Mm-hmm. And they're designed to be very manageable, to add no more than 5 minutes a day, maybe 10 on occasion, maybe even less, to one's routine. I know I have a lot of things on my plate, and adding something else sometimes feels overwhelming. And yet what these practices are designed to do is to raise our awareness, to make us more conscious and more connected, and to bring that throughout the course of the day. They are simple, they're easy, they don't require any particular equipment for the most part, and they don't take very long, but they do take a commitment to actually doing them. The practices are quite simple. They don't consume much time unless you wish to use them more often than is suggested. They're designed to add no more than 5 to 10 minutes to each day, and they're meant to be practiced every day, or at least as many as you can manage. However, you really do have to work with the practices if you want them to make a difference in your lives and in the lives of those around you. And honestly, they may seem so obvious and simple that you wonder why they're offered at all. Well, it's because we need to practice them. The earth needs these energies. Other human beings, other non-human beings, and consciousnesses need these energies to be experienced and lived on this planet now. That's my view. And while many of you have the knowledge which underlie the practices, without the actual doing of them, it's unlikely that the energies will manifest for you or for others. So knowing that it's likely that if you do work with them, some will be more resonant than others, see what happens, and toss away anything that doesn't work, and hold on to anything that does. The goal is to assist you to expand the tools at your disposal and to support you in actually using them. This is a time of increment, a time when a patchwork of small actions actually work to hold sacred space and help us avoid the undertow. This is the great news. Small things done with diligence can create significant shift. It's likely that the suggestions, practices, exercises, whatever you want to call them, will be familiar to many of you in some way or another. As we said, you have the knowledge, most of you. There's nothing new. But if you're inclined, you can receive these practices as part of a scaffolding that will help you structure your lives as you want to, that will succor and enfold these parts of life on earth in a way that can continue to bring joy no matter what is happening out there. I've worked with all these for some time, and what I found is that some of them are more meaningful to me. They touch me because of who I am, and other people who've used them have found so that some others are more effective and connect them more with themselves and with other forms of consciousness, or with their joy, with their gratitude. So they're an offering to play with. You know, people can pick them up and give them a try. And the only proviso that they certainly aren't going to do anything if they're not practiced.
Are there other themes that run through all of the practices besides the notion of presence that you would want to point to?
Well, I would say that they are really about connection. Their connection with oneself, connection with other human beings, connection with the planet, connections with other forms of life on the planet. That sense of being part of a web, Because I think that the experience of being expanded as a human being, not being this small, little, self-interested animal.
How wonderful that you bring this out on Interdependence Day.
Exactly. That is where we touch into what is truly extraordinary about human beings, is that we have the capacity, and I'm not saying that other species don't, but we do have the capacity to merge both this dense but often beautiful form with the divine spark that exists in us. And when we can connect with others and with other forms of that spark, there is an expansion, a sense of belonging, a sense of being something bigger than what our little lives tell us we are day in and day out, and what those that run the world tell us we are day in and day out. And so this is, in fact, what we are capable of, is that incredible expansion and connection and oneness and the bliss. I'm sorry, that's a big word in some ways, and it's a loaded word in some ways, but there is an extraordinary experience when one feels connected to everything that is alive. Again, that's kind of a high bar, but these practices are designed as portals to that. If you are interested in knocking on those doors and seeing what's behind them.
Neil Young and more than 60 collaborators put together a topical song for this year's Interdependence Day celebration. It's called Children of Destiny. Lyrics are on the Sequitur Sunset Windows page at panina.org. Reviews on YouTube have been mixed. I'll play it now.
The children of destiny, the children of destiny.
You just heard Neil Young's newly released Children of Destiny. What do you think, Benji?
Our world is too far askew for changing the fact that we're through. There's no point in a quest, but when feeling depressed, at least it's something to do.
That's right. But I'll tell you what I think. It may not be Neil Young's most radical song or his most well-crafted piece of music, but I'm ever so grateful that this artist of legendary stature is still willing to bring his power and influence to the struggle instead of ensconcing himself in the hedonism he has fully earned, richly deserves, and can easily afford, and waiting around to die. You know, he showed up at Standing Rock, too.
Yee-haw.
And now, it is my pleasure to invite Elizabeth West to walk us through the first of the Sunset Windows practices. Elizabeth?
This practice is called Celebrating the Ordinary. The sheer volume, the raw numbers of things and beings in our world is overwhelming. Forgetting for a moment all things man-made, the count of animals, plants, rocks, and stones is unfathomable and as unknowable in its own way as the reality of universes within universes. There is more out there than any human mind can actually comprehend, and there is far more before and around us than we can take in fully as well. As a means of regulation, we learned early to sort and order, to prioritize, and also to discard. The brightest of flowers, the flashiest of birds, the most charismatic of people, the biggest and most beautiful are the ones that tend to get our attention. While this is one way to navigate, many of us find ourselves walking through a world that has less meaning than we long for. Many of us may wonder aloud about our own value in a world that loves the peacock and ignores the brown thrush. That process of prioritizing has edged us all into a space where we often overlook the exquisite marvels of the ordinary. As you know, the divine dwells equally in the quotidian and the sublime. But even knowing this, the balance of your experience of the divine may be out of kilter. For many people, this is so. Whatever you want to call the divine, the universal, the life force. The following practice is designed to assist you in rebalancing in seeing the world in greater fullness. You will always need filters. We all do. There's no way to use your mind to take it all in. But try this practice and shift your focus just a little and see where it leads you. With this practice, you can come a little closer to a true understanding of your own environment and the incredible consciousness that surrounds us at every moment. So the suggestion is that you do this every day. And again, it's not going to take more than 5 minutes every day if you attend to it efficiently. So the first thing you want to do is set aside between 3 and 5 minutes. And out of doors is best if you can get out of doors. It can be done indoors as well, though it's better to get at least into the periphery of nature. If it's on a back porch or looking out a window, it's possible. But the closer you can get to non-human environment, the better. So maybe you walk from a parking lot to an office, or perhaps you have a yard you can go out into. Be creative about it, but just get out if you can or get near to nature. So the goal here is to seek around you for a small and seemingly insignificant manifestation of life, of consciousness, of form. It could be a pebble of an ordinary nature, a weed. It could be a plant or a mineral, but it could also be something animate, like that brown thrush or a squirrel or something else that seems fairly ordinary to you. It could be an ant or an insect. Once you've identified something that strikes you as fairly ordinary, just sit with it and allow yourself to really look, to feel, and to know it. And while you're doing that, just stay open to its beauty, to anything that's unique about its nature, and just look and feel until you sense the extraordinary and heretofore unseen complexity or even the breathtaking simplicity. Just look for what's there. Spend some time with something that you would ordinarily walk right by, not look at, not give the time of day to. Once you have actually encountered something in this ordinary item that feels extraordinary, then you can let it go. You can thank it and you can go about your day. Doing this once or twice probably won't change your outlook radically, but I find that practicing it at least once a day for a week or two, you begin to see the world and yourself, perhaps, in a new manner. And it's one that's more true, and it's also more loving. I had an experience that I'll just share with this practice. I found a little stone in my garden. It had a nice, smooth shape, which is probably what caught my eye. I held it and scanned it for interesting patterns, colors, etc. I tried to find some wonder at its reddish-brown hue, but really there was nothing. This was a most ordinary and uninspiring little rock. I was about to toss it back to the ground and find something more special to work with, which of course was contradicting the whole purpose of this exercise, when it occurred to me to ask the stone to show me what it held for me. And as I sat with it, I became aware that this stone had a volcanic past, and it had a long journey, had been through eons, and its evolution was, beyond my knowing, but I could feel how long it had been on this planet and how many forms it had taken. And I found myself holding something that felt so massive, so sacred, so eternal. It was quite breathtaking. And then I happened to look around and notice that my garden is just overflowing with these little messengers of amazement. I was filled with gratitude and delight just holding this tiny little brown pebble that I wouldn't have given another thought to had I not made the effort. So that's an example of what that exercise can look like. So try it and see what you find.
If you'd like to try it right now, the instructions are spelled out on the panina.org webpage for Sequitur Sunset Windows. And I'm going to play a short instrumental accompaniment by Zimft that captures this spirit even in its title. A puddle of insecticide in a parking garage yields enlightenment.
Thank you.
You just heard Zimph's 1993 song titled A Puddle of Insecticide in a Parking Garage Yields Enlightenment. You can find more of his music on SoundCloud. His stage name is spelled ZYMPHT. You know, that was really a beautiful example, Elizabeth. I
found myself getting a little choked up, a little tight around the throat and the eyes as you were describing your connection through this stone to geological time. Respect is what popped up in my mind as you were speaking, a sense of respect for this seemingly innocuous, indifferent, ordinary little thing that turns out to encapsulate worlds of significance.
That's it. And of course, you know, we can talk about it and I can describe my experience, but having your own experience is that much more powerful.
Well, sure.
It's cool. I love doing that. You know, and you start looking around and there are weeds growing up in the cracks in the sidewalk, and you start to look at those and your mind's blown by how intricate and how incredible each of them is. So, you know, the world is just filled with these unbelievably extraordinary things that we never look at. And when you start to look at them, it just makes life a lot more delicious.
Yeah.
Even while it's going to hell in a handbasket.
And I appreciate the honesty in that, and also the willingness to hold the paradox with no pressure or obligation to fix it or resolve it or change it in any way, to let the world go to hell in a handbasket and still revel in the marvel of it all. It's a beautiful, beautiful way to approach these end times. Before this meeting, I listened to Guy McPherson. That's always a real deep dive into impending doom.
Yeah.
It's like there is no rebuttal. How can you argue with overwhelming evidence, you know? It would be pure hubris to argue with overwhelming evidence of that magnitude.
Hubris or just denial, which is behind, I think, a lot of people's argument with that overwhelming evidence. And there are people who are arguing. And that, you know, obviously is a mechanism designed to keep us upright and moving when we might want to curl up in a ball and give up.
Well, I'd rather curl up in a ball and make love to pebbles.
That's my point. I would too. I don't want to argue because I think that's silly. That's a waste of time. I don't especially hold out any hope that there's activism that will change much. Change the final outcome. But I think, you know, we do have sovereignty in this small little space, which is our own experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always as simple as it sounds, because the facts on the ground can be overwhelming, and there are a lot of feelings. But I think the idea here is that, you know, those pebbles are our allies. Those weeds are our allies. They love us as much as we can love them. You know, they give back. Or they may not love us particularly individually, but they are manifestations of life. And as such, they are love in my view. And so we get to participate in something that is different and balances the sad realities that Guy keeps on reminding us exist, which is a great gift because then we know. Then we get the chance actually to feel that pressure, to pay attention to the pebble or the weed, to have communion with other parts of life that we might be inclined to ignore.
Yeah. I want to wrap up by giving a more thorough rundown to the listeners about where they can find your work and find out more about you and what you're up to.
Great. My website is www.loveslonging.com. And there's information about my work there, both written and also the personal counseling and guidance that I provide as part of my work. There's also links to purchasing my book, which is called Love is the Way, of daily offerings for living luminously from the guides. And you ask me what I'm up to. Well, I am attempting to live as consciously and as fully and to follow my heart in these times.
Who could ask for more?
I'm very grateful. Strangely, very, very grateful. And I'm grateful to you, Susan, for all that you do. I need to add that because you are offering something to all of us that is unique and special, and I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate being seen in that light, Elizabeth. That's really kind of you to say. It means a lot to me to have you show up so fully on the Sequitur podcast. So thank you very much. And
that's it for now. Special thanks to my special guest, Elizabeth West, for launching the Sunset Windows series on Sequitur. To Benjamin the Donkey for his sometimes irreverent but always enlightened commentary. And thanks to musical contributors Neil Young for half a century of activism through music, to Hear for conscious music that rocks, and to Zimft for the Sequitur theme music. Until next time, this is Susan Livingston.
Connects us is one.